Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.
It's the week 17 edition of the Broncos Horsin' Around podcast, the final edition of the 2016 season, as the Broncos are going to be done much sooner than they anticipate. Happy New Year. I'm Andrew Mason. As always, I'm joined by the man from KOA AM 850, 94.1 FM, Denver Sports 760, and your sideline reporter on the Broncos Radio Network, the esteemed Andy Lindahl. Andy, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Andrew, and I'm never esteemed.
Broncos season, it's going to be done Sunday, but with elimination from the playoffs, we're all reflecting. What have we learned, Charlie Brown? And I ask you, Andy, what have we learned, Andy Lindahl, about the 2016 Broncos and what this season was, and I think will be remembered more by what it was not?
Yeah, you know what? What we learned was, it's a great question, Andrew, because you know what? I want to say what we learned is the window is small. Now, I don't believe the window is closed for this, but all great units have their run. And I think what we learned that maybe we were reminded how injuries can change things so much, because that's some of what happened along with this defense. But I think what we learned ultimately, and it's something you and I had discussed before, and I think we brought it up on one of the preseason podcasts, what I ultimately kind of learned but was trying to warn people about, I'm not trying to be an I told you so here, but honestly, last year's Denver Broncos offense was clutch. Not good, but they were clutch. And we've talked about it before. When they needed points, they got you the points, so you had enough to win the game. And we found out that though you can get better quarterback play than you got from the Hall of Famer a year ago, you still don't always get clutch, even though I think Trevor Siemian showed well for himself in his first year.
Yeah, that's a great point, because if you look at the numbers on the passing game, the 2016 Broncos are ahead of the 2015 Broncos. And this is taking into account both what Brock Osweiler did and what Peyton Manning did during the 2015 season. But, you know, when were those numbers accomplished? When were those yards racked up? You know, how many of them were when it really mattered, when it was in crunch time? And of course, the other thing is that there are other aspects to the offense. And let's not forget that last year, once you got into November, December, and January, the running game, while not as consistent as Gary Kubiak would have liked, was effective at times and certainly could wear a team out when it was working. And this year, the running game, the moment it looked like it was coming together, C.J. Anderson has the torn meniscus, and ever since then, the Broncos have had the worst ground game in the league by yardage per game and yardage per carry. That put everything onto the passing game. I mean, there was that one burst against Jacksonville where you thought, okay, there's some momentum coming for the running game, and then Capri Bibbs got hurt, and it pretty much came to a full stop right then and there. And Trevor Siemian, although he has done some good things this year, he's not yet at the point where he can carry it on his shoulders, carry the entire team on his shoulders for a long time. And that, I think, contributed to the ultimate breakdown of the Broncos in December.
You know what else I think we learned? Because I like your theme, so I'm going to continue with it if you're all right with that. But
please do.
What I learned also is Trevor Siemian, for all the unknown about him, is an NFL caliber starter.
Yes.
Now can you take the jump in the offseason that puts you top 15 to top 10? Because the Broncos, I think we all got caught up in, and this happened with the Broncos' last Super Bowl teams. Everybody thought, well, you got the run game in Terrell Davis, flip the keys to the next guy who we thought at the moment was going to be Brian Griese or Bubby Brister, and the train keeps rolling. And we learned the hard lessons there as well. I think what we learned is, even though this defense is good, and I think you got the core there that they can stay good, you may need to identify a new leader with DeMarcus Ware possibly playing his, you know, last game last Sunday, and not even, he's on IR now, so he won't even play against the Raiders. But to me, Trevor Siemian still needs to be, if you're going to consistently compete in the playoffs, you got to have at least a top 10, maybe top 15 guy. And if you're going to have that guy, to your point, you still have to have the complement of the run game. And I hope this team, I think you're right about Capri Bibbs going down, how that changed the run game. So did losing Andy Janovich. Mm-hmm. I hope they pick up multiple fullbacks next year, because you're going to have a backup one. And frankly, you got to identify the tight end situation.
Yeah, tight end, Very good point. I mean, you've seen some promising moments from Jeff Heuerman the last couple of weeks. I think some guys, you get them out there for playing time, and they just show something that you didn't think they had. So you're cautiously optimistic about that. A.J. Derby, he had the drop pass against New England. He had the fumble against Tennessee. Oh, that's a great defensive play. There's some promise there, and you know what Virgil Green is. I still think you may see them look to add to that complement, but that's probably not a primary need compared to other areas going into the offseason. But, you know, you mentioned, you know, the last time the Broncos were defending a title back in 99, you know, there were injuries to the 99 team, much more severe than the ones that this team dealt with, but they were still substantial for both teams, and it affected each of them. And even though Peyton Manning, by the end of his career, was not the Peyton Manning of his prime, you know, he certainly had that presence, and he certainly had that leadership, and he had the ability to get the offense in the right play at the right time. And that's not something that you get overnight. So you mentioned Trevor Siemian, how, you know, you want to see him, or, you know, if it's Paxton Lynch, if there's an open competition, you want one of them to jump into the top 10 or 15 quarterbacks. Can that happen? Well, if it doesn't happen, then you're shopping for another quarterback, because at any position in this league, if you're not among the top half at minimum among starters, they're always looking for your replacement. So that's what's on the line going into 2016 for both, or 2017, pardon me, for both of these quarterbacks.
You know what else I think we learned? I think we learned that you need to figure out your starting quarterback in camp. And it can't be open competition come training camp. I think if you sign a veteran to this roster, and if they were to do it, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think it'll be Tony Romo. It's just going to be too expensive. And even Tyrod Taylor is, you know, that's one that's going to be thrown out there if he's let go by the Bills because of the pursuit of him a couple years ago. But he's got to get the right price. You got a first-round draft pick hanging around in the background here. I don't know that he'll find that situation enticing if he wants to lay down roots for 4 or 5 years, which you assume he probably would. So to me, you got to sign the right guy. Emmanuel Sanders told us on our show the other day, he said that he plans right now that he's bringing the quarterbacks out to Houston. Mm-hmm. He's bringing the guys with him, and we're going to get that camp going. And you know what? There was nothing wrong. They did that last year, but they did it with Mark Sanchez, and it was under his guidance. And so Mark, I'm assuming, probably took a majority of the reps. Mm-hmm. You not only need to do the camp with just Paxton and just Trevor, in my mind, you probably go through the offseason. To me, if you add a quarterback, assuming they're as comfortable with their two options as I think they're going to be, and maybe I'm wrong about that, but if you're going to go into this offseason with those two quarterbacks, I don't think you sign a third quarterback till you maybe get to training camp and call him a training camp arm. Or you draft a young kid that takes the one pass, and that's it. But Trevor and Paxton got to get a load of snaps this offseason.
I actually wouldn't mind the draft quarterback. If you don't have a veteran in there, I like the idea of drafting a number three quarterback. That's the old Ron Wolf philosophy when he ran the Packers. Even though there wasn't a pressing need for a quarterback, he kept bringing guys in at the back end of the depth chart. And if they develop, even if they develop into something, you know, substantial, even if you don't have use for them as a starter, you can offload them for more than the draft pick or undrafted value of bringing in that guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Broncos do that. Now, I also wouldn't be surprised to see them bring in a veteran just for presence, insurance policy, call it what you will. But Paxton, you know, you look at this Sunday, Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian, they are going to split the reps. Gary Kubiak has said that. He hasn't said how they're going to be divided, but he has said they're both going to play. And as he and Rick Dennis have mentioned, Trevor Siemian is still young as well, so it's not like, you know, oh, Paxton needs the reps. Well, so does Trevor. Yeah. He's still at the point in his career where he is learning and growing from every rep. So anything you do to take away reps from them, I think only hurts them. And only hurts your hopes of finding a long-term quarterback from one of these two guys. Because even though, obviously, you have the first-round investment in Paxton Lynch, when you step back from it, you don't care which one you hit on. You don't care which one becomes the long-term guy. You just want one of these two to become the long-term quarterback, like you said, top 10 or 15 guy that with what else is on this roster can get you back to the Super Bowl.
Well, and to me, look, you can have an open competition if you want to. I shouldn't have used that term in my last statement. You can have an open competition, but you better have a closed depth chart for the moment, at least starting camp. You got to know who the one is, and that one, you've got to be gambling that he's going to still be the one come the opening day, right? Mm-hmm. If you want to do the split reps for a week, I guess. But I really would like to know what this offense could have been had we not all been fooled by what we thought we were going to get out of Mark Sanchez. And I'm not afraid to say, I thought Mark Sanchez would at least hold down the job if at minimum first half of the year. I thought there was no way with how tough, and as it turned out, the first half of the schedule was nowhere near as tough as the second half. It kind of fooled us.
Help being at home for five games in the first half.
Yeah, and we didn't. You know what? A lot of us didn't pick up on, at least I didn't. And then when we just experienced the grind of road trips that you and I have been on the last 8 weeks, and I talked about that in the first segment, guys are tired. I'll repeat to you in a second what Emmanuel said, but I think you've got to have your number one on the depth chart figured out and let him have the reps, because I think it hurt him this year. Too many guys jumping in there and rotating around. Not so much the guys confidence-wise. I don't think you need that. If you want to go win the job, go win the job. It's about the timing with guys and the little nuances you get during a camp that just nobody got because of the helter-skelter situation.
Well, and the other thing to consider is this. Let's go back to 2012 in Seattle. Russell Wilson becomes the number one quarterback, but he wasn't getting number one reps throughout the offseason, and even in training camp, those went to Matt Flynn. And then when you got out, when you were in practice, and then you were in the preseason games, Wilson was running with the twos and threes. But he did so well and was so overwhelming that eventually they had to give him the job. One thing that happens if you're working entirely with one team is you get one unit, you get timing with those guys. And that allows you to show more of what you've got rather than, you know, kind of going back and forth, and because you get used to it, you get comfortable with it. And then let's say Paxton is the number two, and let's say he's working with the second team when you get to training camp. Now I'm all for having a division of reps and OTAs. You know, that's teaching, that's where you're finding out. But you get to training camp, you've got a clear 1, 2, and 3. Well, Paxton Lynch, let's say he's the number two, then he's going to be able to show what he's got with guys with whom he has outstanding timing, because he will have had extra reps with them. And maybe that's his best chance to show his skill set. And then if Trevor Siemian struggles and he's the number one and Paxton Lynch is overwhelmingly successful with the number twos, then you move him up and then you go from there.
Yeah. Bottom line is, I hope it looks more traditional next year. And I'm sure the Broncos do too. Let's be honest about it. The Broncos didn't want to go in with the situation they have. And I really believe a lot of us thought Mark Sanchez would show better than he did. It was unbelievable. I don't know about you.
Thought that he could be the right guy for a veteran team with what was around him.
Yep.
Just thought he could be steady, that he would take what was there, that he would, you know, his tendency to force the ball wouldn't exist. Well, it did. He forced the ball into coverage. We saw it in practice constantly. I mean,
and he completely unraveled against the Niners. I'd never seen anything like it. Every throw just got worse.
Well, it was that, and then when he had the fumbles on top, you know, on top of the throws, when he had that fumble, you know, that's when he had that second fumble, because remember, he'd fumbled, the defense had gotten the offense the ball back, and then he had another turnover. You could sense the unease in the stadium, on the sideline, the worry that, like, oh my goodness, that
this is the guy.
This is who he always was. He was a turnover prone quarterback. He had a 7-season history of that coming in. If you looked at the maximum possible sample size, he was turnover prone, the most turnover prone quarterback in the league in that span with over like 1,200 plays, I believe it was. And you got the feeling that if he's out there, the defense at some point is going to get extraordinarily frustrated because the offense is going to be giving away its good work. Of course, as we've seen as the season has gone on, you know, we saw the reports and the friction between Russell Okung and Aqib Talib in the locker room. I think more of that was made of it than should have been, but it clearly does show that there was some frustration that built because the defense against the Patriots was holding Tom Brady and company to 16 points, and the offense was in the middle of a December in which you only had 3 touchdowns for its account.
I want your reaction to this. And I don't want to like get anybody in trouble, so I'm kind of measuring my words here, but look, he said it on the air, so I don't even know why I'm worried about it. Emmanuel Sanders, I'd asked him, are you tired? You guys maybe just need a break from each other. And, you know, it's one of those things you kind of ask at the end of the interview. I didn't really know what kind of answer I'd get. I didn't even really know if I'd get an honest answer.
Mm-hmm.
Got an incredibly honest answer where he said, you know what, I love football, and I'd play it all year round if I could, and I wish we were going to the Super Bowl, and I wish we were in the playoffs, and it kills me that we're not, and I can't. It's hard to accept that we're not going to defend the title. But he just admitted, he goes, you know what, I'm mentally and physically exhausted and worn out, and I need a break. And mm-hmm. I can take 6 weeks and just go play golf and sit in the sun and not think about things. And he said, I really, really need it. And I know, again, I know for the blue-collar guy that's working two jobs, I get your plight. I'm not trying to make you feel sorry for a professional athlete. But what we are trying to do is explain to people and give them little insights into why this thing went the way it did. And it's extremely hard to repeat in this league. I think the Broncos, whether they want to admit it or not, I don't think they realized how much everybody was gunning for them mm-hmm. until really after the first Raider loss. I think that's when it clicked into them. Holy cow, everybody wants a piece of us, and nobody's playing soft. And I think it's because of what you said. Mm-hmm. So many games were at home. We weren't tasting the road environment where we were hearing the pregame shows in the stadium where they were talking about how big this game was.
And even and there was one moment that I thought it could have happened. It was going down to Tampa to play the Tampa Bay Bucks in week four. And their season was at a crossroads at that point, and they were talking about how big that game was, and I thought, boy, they might come in on fire. I admit I grew up a Bucks fan. I still follow the Bucks very closely. I hadn't heard that kind of chatter from the Bucks in a long, long time. That game could have gone a bad direction if Jameis Winston makes a better decision early, but he doesn't. Keep Tlaib gets the pick, Broncos score. So the Broncos dodged a bullet there because they were able to get some rare early momentum, something that they rarely had all season. I believe only three first-quarter touchdowns this year. Amazing.
So many scoreless first quarters and quarters where you didn't even visit the other side of the field, the other mm-hmm. side of the 50.
Yeah.
Can't have that this Sunday.
But so there were moments it could have happened early, but it didn't. But then you got to the Raiders game. You got even both Chiefs games, both here in Denver and in Kansas City. The Tennessee game. That crowd, that was a jacked up crowd and a jacked up team. Even Jacksonville played a very spirited game against the Broncos. That's what you have to take when you're a world champion, but you've got to have the mettle to withstand that. And over the course of the season, more and more the Broncos couldn't find that mettle. Something with being tired, and I think about this a lot. The thought first came in my mind with this team back when I was watching the NBA playoffs last spring, Spurs and Thunder, Western Conference semis. And it was mentioned during one of the broadcasts just how much basketball, extra basketball, the Spurs had played from going deep into the postseason so many times over an 8-year span. I believe it added up to more than an extra entire season. And against a younger, more spry Thunder, it caught up to them. The Broncos, if you go in terms of weeks of practice since 2011, they've had 16 extra weeks of practice, summer buys, but still, you're in season mode, you're in preparation mode. 16 weeks that other teams had off, and that's so, just do the math. That's basically an extra season on top of the ones they'd played, and I think it caught up to them. And then, of course, winning the Super Bowl, there's a lot that goes along with it. You've got the trip to Washington. It's fun, it's grand, you want to savor it, but I think it's not just the players. I think the entire building, I think, needs to kind of catch its breath a little bit in the next few weeks.
Andrew, it's clear that the whole team was tired. I think you and I began to see that as the season went along. Look, it was obvious. You could feel it. And maybe it wasn't so obvious. It was obvious to guys like you and I think, because we lived that season with them, right? I was telling people, I was really tired. Frankly, the last couple trips just have not been a lot of fun. I enjoy the road trips. They're quick trips. They're easy business trips. We're spoiled with the way we travel as far as the charters, and we don't deal with a lot of the hassles that most business travelers deal with. So it actually is kind of fun to go on the road with these guys. But I was just done. I was just done in being different in different cities, especially 3 of the 4 weeks in December. You get done with, from a family perspective, and not all these guys are family guys, but enough are, even if it's just a girlfriend, or whatever it could be, man, you get done with Thanksgiving, and it's like immediately 2 weeks on the road. You got 1 weekend of kind of soaking up whatever Christmas or Hanukkah is for you, uh-huh. and another week of the big holidays back on the road. It was a lot.
Yeah. I've never seen an NFL team schedule that included one November home game, one December home game, and one January home game.
I didn't even think. See, these are the little things in the schedule that you bring up that just never struck me. I don't know why 5 of the first 7 at home didn't strike me. You know what I mean? It just didn't mm-hmm. set in with me. Or what'd you even say? Was it 5 of the first 8? You know, I think we all looked at what were we doing on Christmas because we all knew it was going to be on a Sunday. And what's going to happen with the bye week? You always look for where the bye week is, right? Mm-hmm. And where are you opening? And we knew we'd be opening at home on Thursday. I bet you next week's or next year's schedule will be a little bit kinder as far as this stuff, but it's still going to be grueling as far as East Coast travel.
Maybe fewer primetime games.
Fewer primetime games, but I bet you I told you earlier this week, I bet you they open on the road for the first time in 4 or 5 years.
And we were talking about this. I wouldn't be surprised if that opener on the road is maybe the second half of the Monday night doubleheader. So it could maybe a division game right out of the blocks. Could be in Denver, could be on the road. It could even be at Kansas City. Kansas City, even though it's in the central time zone, has hosted the second half of that ESPN Monday night opener, I believe twice.
Any chance, if let's just say, and I don't think it is, I think Kansas City, they're a better team than I thought they were. I give them credit. I don't put them in the Super Bowl category just yet, especially with probably having to go through the wild card. We'll see. But that said, what if Kansas City were to go to the Super Bowl and win it? You think the Broncos, by any chance, could be their opener? I guess we'd have to see if they couldn't recreate that Super Bowl matchup.
Well, that's the thing. Let's see. You know, let's say the Chiefs made the Super Bowl. Then
you'd have to have an Eastern team because we play the NFC East next
year.
Well,
it would be, yeah. If the Chiefs were in the Super Bowl, it would have to be against the Giants or the
Cowboys.
Cowboys. And then that would further depend on whether the game was at home because, you know, if the Chiefs won the Super Bowl, then you'd want them to host unless you could have a situation like they had in Baltimore in 2013 where you have a baseball team who's nearby. Now, that being said, I don't think the Royals are as stubborn as the Orioles were in saying, no, we're not moving our game to the day. We're not going to have a doubleheader another day. We're going to play that game as scheduled. You cannot have the parking deck. And that's why the Ravens had to come to Denver to Denver that year. For the record, Chiefs home schedule next year does not include Dallas or the Giants.
So there you go.
But does include Washington. So if Washington gets on a run, a hot streak here, and goes to the Super Bowl and plays the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, there's your opener. But if not, if the Chiefs did go all the way, then certainly, even though this game was a blowout last Sunday, a matchup of the last two world champions would be an attractive opener. And let's go back to 2000. Denver at St. Louis.
Yep.
Broncos were coming off 6-10, but it didn't prevent ABC, which had Monday Night Football then, from wanting that matchup right out of the gates. And even though the Broncos lost, it was a 41-36 game. It was one of those losses where you thought, okay, they're going to be okay.
Yeah, it was a hell of a game. They got what they wanted out of it. Now look, if it is Cowboys Chiefs or Giants Chiefs and they lose, this may nullify and the Chiefs may be doing what the Panthers did and going to see the team. But see, I don't think the Chiefs helped the Panthers at all.
It didn't help either team, but I really thought it hurt the Panthers once they lost, and I don't think they ever recovered from that game.
People thought I was crazy. And I got made fun of by some people, and I was told NFL players don't deal with it that way. Look, I can only relate to it from a fan standpoint. But I can remember, and I've said to people before, you well know this, I grew up here, and I never apologize for the fact that I grew up in this fan base, and I'm not going to divorce myself from it just because I work in the media. I still try to be fair, and if you hear my comments, I hope people feel that way. I'm not trying to sell you a bill of goods. The reality of the situation is I can remember wanting that Seattle game over with, but not happy that we had to deal with it the first month of the season when you're trying to work some stuff out.
Back in 2014.
Yep. After the Broncos, thank you. After the Broncos lost to the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. And so I thought to have to start with that. And frankly, I thought we would be doing that year. I thought the NFL was going to rematch the Super Bowl, and I don't know how we avoided it. I don't know how they passed that up, but they did, and I'm glad they did it because I agree with you. The Panthers to have to start the next season with all the highlights and reminders of the stuff you were trying to forget about, that was cruel punishment to them. And I agree with you. It stuck with them the first month of the season, just like that last Chiefs loss. I think the home Chiefs loss has stuck with the Broncos this part of the season, the same way that the Chiefs loss at home that the Broncos handed them in 2015 in the second week of the season ruined the next four games for Kansas City before they got hot.
Yep. There, momentum is not a myth. Now, there are some stat people that will try to tell you it is, and I'm a stats guy. But when I see so many instances of a team that gets caught in the whirlpool, so to speak, and cannot pull its way out of it, happened to the Panthers this year, happened to the Chiefs last year, and I think to some degree it's happened to the Broncos this year as well. Now, I mean, they had the one win against Jacksonville, but look, Jacksonville's 3-12.
And that was an ugly, ugly win.
Yes. That was...
Sorry to put two uglies on it, but there's your truth.
Yeah. The Jags, they have some nice defensive parts, but offensively, that's a team going nowhere, and it was tailor-made for Denver's defense to win it by any means necessary, and with a Roby pick six and a Von Miller strip sack at the end of the game, it did.
And I do think the Chiefs game has played into a lot of what we've seen. That gut kick at the end of the game, I think, has played into a lot of what we've seen this last month.
It has. Well, think about this team the last 2 years. The equation for success usually revolved around the defense standing up late and making the big stop. Did so throughout the 2015 season. Did so at times during the 2016 season. However, there were some warnings. Let's go back to the Panthers game. You win that because Graham Gano misses the re-kick.
Yep.
The Panthers did drive into scoring position. Now, granted, there was that bad call on fourth down on Chris Harris Jr., but the bottom line is the Panthers did drive into scoring position. Fast forward to November, Superdome. The Saints drive to what would have been a game-winning touchdown, or even if the PAT misses, the game-tying touchdown. But then Will Parks and Justin Simmons step in and save the day on special teams. So there were two instances where the defense that had been so locked down, successful, often forcing turnovers in those close and late situations with the lead, had let up, but it hadn't cost the Broncos the game because of other factors. Finally, against the Chiefs, it did have it had the let up, and it did cost them. So it was there were some signs that there was a game like that coming.
Well, and to your point, maybe there was a little more luck in just getting to what could be a 500 record at this point than maybe we accounted for. Again, the first month of the season where we thought they were passing tests, turns out they really weren't. Turns out that Cincinnati and Carolina in particular weren't what we thought, and even Indy wasn't as good as we figured they'd
be. Who knew Tampa Bay would be the best team the Broncos faced in the first four?
Right, and even their rise, I think, just got the air taken out of the tires by the Cowboys. So
yeah.
So we'll see. Hey, what are you expecting out of the Raider game this week as far as who plays? And you talked about what we learned. What do we learn?
What are we going to learn from this game? Well, Gary Kubiak has said he wants to play everybody. Now, what everybody means, entails, we're going to see. I mean, does that mean we're going to see more of Billy Turner on the offensive line? Appears that way. He's played the last couple of weeks, some possessions. Do we finally see Connor McGovern out there? Maybe, I would hope so. You want to start getting a look at him. Derek Wolfe has the neck problem, so we're going to probably see more of Adam Gotsis than we've seen. Maybe we see some of Henry Cricker Cobble, some more of him having to play a tight end, although Virgil Green is out of the concussion protocol, so he's going to play along with Jeff Heirman. Maybe you see Taurean Nixon and Lorenzo Doss spelling Chris Harris and Aqib Talib at some point.
Well, those aren't good size matchups, just being honest.
No, but the thing is, you also want to win. And even though the Broncos are out of it, you know, there's a lot of personal pride involved. There's team pride involved in trying to get to 9-7 and finish with another winning season. At least you'd like to keep that streak alive. You've lost the playoff streak. Maybe you can extend the winning season streak. And I think, you know, for Tlaib and Harris in particular, if they're not, even if they're not focused on things team related, there's individual things they're going for. You know, they're 1-2 in ProFootballFocus.com's rankings. They both want to stay there. Von Miller wants the sack, wants to be the sack champion. There are tangible individual goals that guys going for them may help the Broncos keep it close, keep it competitive, and maybe even steal one against a team that is probably going to play very close to the vest with Matt McGloin replacing Derek Carr at quarterback. Of course, that said, the Raiders will play it close to the vest. They will run it quite a bit, and that's where the Broncos' defense has been weakest.
Well, in my thoughts with you on this, one of the things, and I was told this by Stink, and I think your career, Mark Schlereth, I think your career's had this happen before. Jeb Putzer's told me this, Ed McCaffrey, Dave Diaz-Infante, the list could go on and on of former Broncos that talked to me about practice squad players and practice guys that show what they can do when they've got the fresh legs. They're not taking the beatings on Sunday. They look really good in practice to the coaches. Adrian Madis is a guy that comes to mind from the past. This guy's going to tear it up.
Remember him at the first mini camp in the 2003 offseason?
Yeah.
And I think Peter King, he was at the mini camp and wrote something about him being a future star.
Yep. And everybody hooked onto it. Well, I think Coach Shanahan helped direct him that direction. But
yeah, but I remember he had a lot of big plays during that minicamp.
Well,
we were all sitting there thinking, whoa, this kid's got something.
Well, they thought.
But as former Broncos coach John Fox would often say, it's an underwear.
Right. Well, not only is it an underwear, but this time of year, this is why it's good, for example, that Kyle Pecco gets to play.
Yes.
Because now you get to go out there with guys that are going to be just as juiced as you. And look, I get it. You're the kid trying to get on the active roster if you're on the practice squad, in this case for Pecco. It's your job to go out there and show whatever fire they're going to allow you to show. Now, it's a little bit different now than it was years ago because they're not hitting as much. But guys told me all the time about the late-season practice squad player who, again, was not beat up, not sore, not dealing with injury, not getting kicked around on Sunday, having a good showing late in the year because other guys that are going through all that are tired and not going the same speed. Then we get to training camp, everyone's at the same level again, and you don't show up because you don't have a freshness advantage.
Right.
The coaches get a look at a Kyle Pecco and whoever else they want to. And again, I think it's really important on the lines because it's the last contact. That's why I hope we see McGovern. That's why I hope we see Martin. You need to see all these guys. I don't care, frankly, nothing against him, but I do think his Denver career is over. I don't care if Donald Stevenson shows up in this game at all, because you've got to find out if the most physical positions, if these guys have what it takes going against NFL-caliber players that are playing for the number one seed, and it'll be the great and really last barometer you have till training camp for the guys in the trenches.
Do you want to get a look at James Ferentz?
Yes.
I mean, Matt Paradis, he's had the hip problems. Looks like he's going to play, but do you want to at least get a run from him to see what he can do?
I would tell Von Miller, Trevor Siemian, Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, Akib and Chris, I would tell them all, you got a half. Second half, you're all out. If we got enough room on the roster, we're clearing as many guys as we can. And you know what? Because you got to evaluate these dudes. And again, for Trevor and Paxton, we've talked about this. I don't want either guy starting with an injury. We talked about all those reps we want him to take in the offseason. Well, don't screw that up by having a Derek Carr or Marcus Mariota moment here. And you got to have a surgery and a recovery, and it throws off your reps in the offseason.
Let's face it. With all those guys you mentioned, that's the scenario you're dreading. That's what you're going into this game fearing. Something bad happening to one of your stars. Because let's say you do tear an ACL, then that recovery and rehab, that's taking you right to the start of the season. Now, as we saw with Chris Harris Jr. and Von Miller, you can have a late season injury, even a postseason injury, and you can be back by the regular season. But
that doesn't mean you're yourself.
Right. I mean, what Chris did in his ACL recovery is one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen from an NFL player.
I would agree. But Von, as we saw, took a lot longer to get back to being Von.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, there are other things going on. And he came in heavier and got some new ideas about how he wanted his body to look. I think Vaughn's found his sweet spot about his athletic body.
Yes.
And I'm sure he'll stay there. But
well, he's right. He's at the point. I mean, this is year six. This is, you know, this is about when, you know, LT was hitting a steady stride. You know, Reggie White had his big sack season. As a pro, I think it was in year four, because of course he played in the USFL, but he really started settling into that pass rushing stride year six, year seven, year eight. I mean, he hadn't even gotten to Green Bay by then, and he had a long prime. That's what you're obviously hoping for from Von Miller. But, yeah, this is, you know, he's in that zone. You know, as you go forward to me, he is the build. He is the foundational player. This is his team. One thing I have seen from him that has impressed me in the way he conducts himself is an increased maturity and presence. And let's say DeMarcus Ware decides to retire. I mean, now he said he still has fuel in the tank. And if he does have fuel in the tank, then you want to try to make a deal with him. Obviously, he's a rotational player, probably going forward because of his injuries. But he's an asset to that locker room. But you can see more and more Von Miller really starting to step up and grow into being a leader and a building block. And to me, you build everything around him.
For whatever it's worth about DeMarcus, had a chance to talk to John Elway on our show midweek. I said, would you have a conversation with him? He said, I'll always have a conversation with him.
He means so much to that team and that locker room. And, you know, even though he's had injuries, if he wants to come back and you can get the right deal, I think you find a way to make that deal. And I think the other thing with DeMarcus, maybe I'm misreading things, but I don't see him just going anywhere to keep it going. I think he wants to be somewhere where he's valued, where he has a good comfort zone. And he also, I think, wants to be in a 3-4. He's talked about how he prefers a 3-4, the 4-3, likes to play stand-up. This, and with the quality and depth of pass rushers here, Denver offers him something that I would say no other team can.
And his greatest career success has come around Wade Phillips.
Yes.
So don't discount that. Mm-hmm. You got a nice place downtown. You're always showing in your social media stuff. You're settled, it looks like. I think if both sides can come to the right price tag, it'll be probably an easy thing to do.
Maybe the biggest thing of all, when his kids are come up here, it seems like they absolutely love it up here.
Yeah.
And
well, most
and DeMar- and give credit to DeMarcus Ware. I mean, he's really, you know, he's obviously still got a lot of presence in Dallas from all his years there, but he's really done a good job making himself a part of this community the last 3 years, and he's really embraced. He's become a Coloradoan, and it's been cool to see.
I always like it. Good to have Hall of Famers around.
Yeah, so, you know, I think you're going to get a spirited effort, whether it's the starters, whether it's, you know, guys who were promoted from the practice squad. We saw that, of course, you mentioned Kyle Pecco. They brought up Torian Nixon this week, who had a cameo against the Raiders earlier this season. Be good to see what he can do. But, you know, start finding out. Actually, if you go back to late in the Chiefs game, look how often you saw Khalif Raymond on the outside and Jordan Taylor getting a few more reps. I think we're going to see quite a bit from them. Again, you want to start finding out what these guys possess. Khalif Raymond in particular, I want to see how he rebounds from a very rough game where he had the fumble on the kickoff late and just a very bad decision on a punt that and the Broncos ended up recovering nearly was a disaster. I want to see how that young man rebounds. And I'd like to see more from him on offense. I want to see if they can get him open underneath. You know, there's a lot you can find out, and maybe the other thing that could favor the Broncos, in addition to the fact that when Harris and Tlaib are out there, they'll go one-on-one on the receivers, everyone else can focus on the run game. The element of surprise from some of these guys. You know, there's not a terribly great amount of film of Khalif Raymond, of Jordan Taylor, Kyle Pecco. Maybe these guys can surprise the Raiders, who really don't know what to expect from some of these players.
Yeah, it could be. I just, you know, it just, I'm curious to see with the tone of practice this week, what the energy is level is like. I'm going to be honest about it, because like you'd said, it feels like the last week of school. I agree.
But they are pros.
Well, yeah, they are pros. Look, I think the older guys know how to handle it, and the younger guys are going to be excited to play.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we've seen plenty of games, and they've happened right here at the end of the year, and the Chargers are usually the opponent. That's why last year's Charger game was a little surprising. You get to
said
that
a lot about
quarter,
said a lot about Mike McCoy, Phillip Rivers.
It did.
In terms of getting everyone on and Antonio Gates, I believe he played in that game
seen
as
plenty
well.
Of Raider teams not have any interest in the fourth quarter last game of the season. I don't think we'll see that out of the Broncos, but, you know, just get their help.
Do you remember a game, I think it was in 01, first season at the new stadium, played the Raiders, last home game, next to last week of the season, eliminated. Raiders are going to the playoffs, Broncos are going nowhere, and I think the Broncos won 23-16, something like that. That could, you know, that's your best case scenario for this game, I think.
Maybe. But I'm sorry. For me, your best case is maybe a loss with a hard effort so you can get to 8-8, get a better draft pick, and you make the Chiefs for the punk ass move last week go through the wild card.
I'm not as bothered by that as people are.
I know. Oh, now it's you people.
I didn't say you people. I said people.
No, I mean, you said you people, referring to me.
I said I'm not as bothered about that as some as people are. Whatever. No, you know, you want revenge? You want you
I know, go get it yourself.
Get it next year.
Yeah, but I'll take a little appetizer right. Revenge making well, you go to Houston.
I can't. I'm sorry. There's that little thing that clicks in me. Even though I know the draft pick the draft pick value of losing, I get all that, but you still when you get out there when guys are giving their effort, they want to win. They don't care about
that's
the draft
fine.
Pick.
They can win. I'm just telling you. Let me see a competitive game, and if you slip up, oh well.
But I don't. You know the notion of you lose and maybe you stick it to the Chiefs. You want to stick it to the Chiefs
on your own count. Yeah.
Yeah. Do it next year.
No, look. I want
to do what the Bears did. From 84 to 85,
when, that's fine.
When the Niners used Guy McIntyre in the NFC Championship game, the Bears get him back. They go back to San Francisco the following season, clobber him 26-10, and then, oh, by the way, that's where they introduced the fridge.
Yeah, that's
on offense.
Fine. But I want the Chiefs taking smacks anywhere along the way. I want you to hit every branch on your fall down the tree, like in the cartoons, because I hate that.
Of course, you mentioned the We mentioned the Chargers.
There you go.
Kansas City is going to San Diego, and we know all that is going on with the Chargers and what looks to be a likely relocation, probably their last game in San Diego. But we saw last year the kind of effort the Chargers can give, even when battered in Week 17. I still expect that kind of effort from them. Even though they just lost to the Browns, I would be surprised if they don't give the same kind of effort they did last year in Denver.
We'll see. We'll see.
For Chargers fans in San Diego, I hope that.
We will see.
We will see, yes.
Could be a Chiefs crowd there. Just like every other game for the Chargers has been. I heard the Raider guys saying it was like a Raider crowd there.
Even when the Bucks went out there,
yeah.
Their fans took
great
over.
Great city to visit.
It's warm in the Tampa Bay area.
It's humid, though. It's not humid in San Diego. Give me San Diego over Tampa 9 times out of 10. I'm sorry to your childhood.
Every fan base has invaded Qualcomm and taken over Qualcomm this year.
Yeah. It's a shame.
You should have seen. I think the Saints game was like the Broncos game. Like you looked across the stands, and it was all black and gold. It was, you know, obviously the Broncos. They've had this happen over the years, but I think this year it was interesting how it went to the extreme that every team coming in, no matter whether they had a national fan base or did not, in the case of Tampa Bay, had a fair amount of fans. Even the Titans had a lot of fans.
Yeah, look, the Chargers ought to do themselves a favor. And just have the other team's cheerleaders come with them because their cheerleaders get heckled by the other fan base all the time. We're not going to have anything to talk about next week, you realize.
Oh, we're going to have some stuff. I'm sure. There's always something happening.
There's always some drama.
It's never boring with the Broncos. That's the thing. And as all of us who cover this team know, it has become not quite a 12-month thing because there's that period from late June to a few days before the start of training camp. But it's become an 11-month thing.
Oh, it's 11 and a half. Because that little period before, by about mid-July, something's happening. Although maybe that's what we'll talk about next week, at least this time.
Well, there's no franchise tag this year.
At least you're not dealing with that situation. I think you don't mind using it every year because it means you're drafting really good players.
Yeah, and you saw, the first-round pick, Sylvester Williams from 2013, they would have gotten the fifth-year option for him. They declined it. We'll get into to that topic. We'll talk more about contracts, pending free agents, even the draft, because I'm going to be going down the Senior Bowl in a few weeks. Plenty of camp to come. So keep on listening. We're going to keep this up in the off season. Keep the fire burning. We know you want Broncos info 12 months a year. We're going to give it to you. Andy, thanks as always. Happy New Year.